The Hung Hungese were an outdoor kind of people. From the look of it, they conducted most of their lives on the street and at the top of their voice. Progress was made by viciously elbowing and shoving people until they got out of the way. Standing still and saying, excuse me, was a recipe for immobility. The crowds did part, though, at the banging of a gong and a succession of loud pops. A group of people in white robes danced past, throwing fireworks around and banging on gongs, saucepans, and odd bits of metal. The din contrived to be louder than the street noise, but only by very great effort. Rincewind had been getting the occasional puzzled glance from people who stopped screaming long enough to notice him. Perhaps it was time to act like a native. He turned to the nearest person and screamed, "Pretty good, eh?" The person, a little old lady in a straw hat, stared at him in distaste.
"It's Mr. Wu's funeral," she snapped and walked off.
There were a couple of soldiers nearby. If this had been Ankh Morpork, then they'd have been sharing a cigarette and trying not to see anything that might upset them. But these had an alert look. Rincewind backed into another alley. An untutored visitor could clearly find himself in big trouble here. This alley was quieter, and at the far end opened into something much wider and empty-looking. On the basis that people also meant trouble, Rincewind headed in that direction. Here at last was an open space. It was very open indeed. It was a paved square, big enough to hold a couple of armies. It had cherry trees growing along the verges, and given the heaving mob everywhere else, a surprising absence of anyone.
"You!"
Apart from the soldiers. They appeared abruptly from behind every tree and statue. Rincewind tried to back away, but that proved unfortunate since there was a guard behind him. A terrifying armoured mask confronted him.
"Peasant! Do you not know this is the Imperial Square?"
"Was that a capital S on square, please?" said Rincewind.
"You do not ask questions."
"Ah, I'll take that as a yes. So it's important, then. Sorry, I'll just sort of, go away, then."
"You stay."
But what struck Rincewind as amazingly odd was that none of them actually took hold of him. And then he realized that this must be because they hardly ever needed to. People did what they were told. "There's something worse than whips in the Empire," Cohen had said. At this point, he realized he should be on his knees. He crouched down, hands placed lightly in front of him. "I wonder," he said brightly, rising into the starting position, "if this is the time to draw your attention to a famous saying." Cohen was familiar with city gates. He'd broken down a number in his time by battering ram, siege gun, and on one occasion with his head. But the gates of Hung Hung were pretty damn good gates. They weren't like the gates of Ankh Morpork, which were usually wide open to attract the spending customer, and whose concession to defence was the sign, "Thank you for not attacking our city, bonum diem." These were big and made of metal, and there was a guardhouse and a squad of unhelpful men in black armour.
"Teach?"
"Yes, Cohen?"
"Why are we doing this? I thought we were going to use the invisible duck the mice use."
Mr. Savaloy waggled a finger.
"That's for the Forbidden City itself. I hope we'll find that inside. Now, remember your lessons," he said. "It's important that you all learn how to behave in cities."
"I know how to bloody well behave in cities," said Truckle the Uncivil. "Pillage, ravage, loot, set fire to the damn place on your way out, just like towns, only it takes longer."
"That's all very well if you're just passing through," said Mr. Savaloy, "but what if you want to come back the next day?"
"It ain't bloody well there next day, mister."
"Gentlemen, bear with me. You will have to learn the ways of civilization."
People couldn't just walk through. There was a line, and the guards gathered rather offensively around each cowering visitor to examine their papers. And then it was Cohen's turn.
"Papers, old man."
Cohen nodded happily and handed the guard captain a piece of paper on which was written, in Mr. Savaloy's best handwriting, "We are wandering madmen who have no papers. Sorry." The guard's gaze lifted from the paper and met Cohen's cheerful grin.
"Indeed," he said nastily. "Can't you speak, grandfather?"
Cohen, still grinning, looked questioningly at Mr. Savaloy. They hadn't rehearsed this part.
"Foolish dummy," said the guard.
Mr. Savaloy looked outraged.
"I thought you were supposed to show special consideration for the insane," he said.
"You cannot be insane without papers to say you're insane," said the guard.
"Oh, I'm fed up with this," said Cohen. "I said it wouldn't work if we came across a thick guard."
"Insolent peasant."
"I'm not as insolent as my friends here," said Cohen.
The horde nodded.
"That's us, Flatfoot."
"Bum to you."
"What?"
"Extremely foolish soldier."
"What?"
The captain was taken aback. Deeply ingrained in the Agatean psyche was the habit of obedience. But even stronger was a veneration of one's ancestors and a respect for the elderly, and the captain had never seen anyone so elderly while still vertical. They practically were ancestors. The one in the wheelchair certainly smelled like one.
"Take them to the guardhouse," he shouted.
The horde let themselves be manhandled and did it quite well. Mr. Savaloy had spent hours training them in this, since he knew he was dealing with men whose response to a tap on the shoulder was to turn around and hack off someone's arm. It was crowded in the guardhouse, with the horde and the guards, and with Mad Hamish's wheelchair. One of the guards looked down at Hamish, glowering under his blanket.
"What do you have there, grandfather?"
A sword came up through the cloth and stabbed the guard in the thigh.
"What? What? What's he say?"
"He said arg, Hamish," said Cohen,
a knife appearing in his hand. With one movement, his skinny arms had the captain in a lock, the knife at his throat.
"What?"
"He said arg."
"What? I ain't even married."
Cohen put a little more pressure on the captain's neck.
"Now then, friend," he said, "you can have it the easy way, see, or the hard way. It's up to you." "Blood-sucking pig! You call this the easy way?" "Well, I ain't sweating." "May you live in interesting times. I would rather die than betray my emperor."
"Fair enough." It took the captain only a fraction of a second to realise that Cohen, being a man of his word, assumed that other people were too. He might, if he had had time, have reflected that the purpose of civilization is to make violence the final resort, while to a barbarian it is the first, preferred, only, and above all, most enjoyable option. But by then it was too late. He slumped forward.
"I always live in interesting times," said Cohen, in the satisfied voice of someone who did a lot to keep them interesting.
He pointed his knife at the other guards. Mr. Savaloy's mouth was wide open in horror.
"By rights, I should be cleaning this," said Cohen, "but I ain't going to bother if it's only going to get dirty again. Now, personally, I'd as soon kill you as look at you, but Teach here says I've got to stop doing that and become respectable."
One of the guards looked sideways at his fellows and then fell on his knees.
"What is your wish, O master?" he said.
"Ah, officer material," said Cohen. "What's your name, lad?"
"9 Orange Trees, master."
Cohen looked at Mr. Savaloy.
"What do I do now?" "Take them prisoner, please." "How do I do that?"
"Well, I suppose you tie them up, that sort of thing."
"Ah, and then cut their throats?"
"No, no, you see, once you've got them at your mercy, you're not allowed to kill them." The Silver Horde, to a man, stared at the ex-teacher.
"I'm afraid that's civilization for you," he added.
"But you said the sods haven't got any bloody weapons," said Truckle.
"Yes," said Mr. Savaloy, shuddering a little. "That's why you're not allowed to kill them."
"Are you mad? Got mad papers, have you?"
Cohen scratched his stubbly chin. The remainder of the guard watched him in trepidation. They were used to cruel and unusual punishment, but they were unaccustomed to argument first.
"You haven't had a lot of military experience, have you, Teach?" he said.
"Apart from Form 4, not a lot. But I'm afraid this is the way it has to be done. I'm sorry, you did say you wanted me."
"Well, I vote we just cut their throats right now," said Boy Willie. "I can't be having with this prisoner business either. I mean, who's going to feed them?"
"I'm afraid you have to."
"Who, me? Not likely. I vote we make them eat their own eyeballs. Hands up all in favour.
There was a chorus of assent from the horde, and among the raised hands, Cohen noticed one belonging to 9 orange trees.
What are you voting for, lad?
He said.
Please, sir, I would like to go to the lavatory.
You listen to me, you lot, said Cohen. This slaughtering and butchering business isn't how you do it these days, right? And that's what Mr. Savaloy says, and he knows how to spell words like marmalade, which is more than you do. Now, we know why we're here, and we'd better start as we mean to go on.
Yeah, but you just killed that guard, said Truckle.
I'm breaking myself in, said Cohen. You've got to creep up on civilization a bit at a time.
I still say we should cut their heads off. That's what I did to the mad demon-sucking priests of E.
The kneeling guard had cautiously raised his hands again.
Please, master.
Yes, lad?
You could lock us up in that cell over there. Then we wouldn't be any trouble to anyone.
Good thinking, said Cohen. Good lad. The boy keeps his head in a crisis. Lock him up.
30 seconds later, the horde had limped off into the city. The guards sat in the cramped, hot cell. Eventually, one said,
What were they?
I think they might have been ancestors.
I thought you had to be dead to be an ancestor.
The one in the wheelchair looked dead, right up to the point where he stabbed 4 white fox.
Should we shout for help?
They might hear us.
Yes, but if we don't get let out, we'll be stuck in here, and the walls are very thick, and the door is very strong.
Good.
Rincewind stopped running in some alley somewhere. He hadn't bothered to see if they'd followed him. It was true. Here, with one mighty bound, you could be free, provided you realized it was one of your options. Freedom did, of course, include man's age-old right to starve to death. It seemed a long time since his last proper meal. The voice erupted further down the alley, as if on cue.
Rice cakes! Rice cakes! Get your nice rice cakes! Tea! 100-year-old eggs! Eggs! Get them while they're nice and vintage! Get your... Yeah, what is it?
An elderly man had approached the salesman.
Dibala-san, this egg you sold me. What about it, venerable squire? Would you care to smell it?
The street vendor took a sniff.
Ah, yes. Lovely, he said. Lovely? Lovely? This egg, said the customer, this egg is practically fresh. 100 years old if it's a day, Shogun, said the vendor happily. Look at the colour of that shell, nice and black. It rubs off.
Rincewind listened. There was, he thought, probably something in the idea that there were only a few people in the world. There were lots of bodies, but only a few people. That's why you kept running into the same ones. There was probably some mould somewhere.
You saying my produce is fresh? May I disembowel myself honourably? Look, I'll tell you what I'll do.
Yes, there seemed to be something familiar and magical about that trader. Someone had come to complain about a fresh egg, and yet within a couple of minutes he'd somehow been talked into forgetting this and purchasing 2 rice cakes and something strange wrapped in leaves. The rice cakes looked nice. Well, nicer than the other things. Rincewind sidled over. The trader was idly jigging from one foot to the other and whistling under his breath, but he stopped and gave Rincewind a big, honest, friendly grin.
Nice ancient egg, Shogun.
The bowl in the middle of the tray was full of gold coins. Rincewind's heart sank. The price of one of Mr. Dibala's foul eggs would have bought a street in Ankh-Morpork.
I suppose you don't give credit, he suggested.
Dibala gave him a look.
I'll pretend I never heard that, Shogun, he said.
Tell me, said Rincewind, do you know if you have any relatives overseas?
This got him another look, a sideways one, full of sudden appraisal.
What? There's nothing but evil blood-sucking ghosts beyond the seas. Everyone knows that, Shogun. I'm surprised you don't.
Ghosts, said Rincewind.
Trying to get here, do us harm,
said Disembowel Myself honourably.
Maybe even steal our merchandise. Give them a dose of the old firecracker, that's what I say. They don't like a good loud bang, ghosts.
He gave Rincewind another look, even longer and more calculating.
Where are you from, Shogun?
he asked, and his voice suddenly had a little barbed edge of suspicion. "Bess Pelagic," said Rincewind quickly. "That explains my strange accent and mannerisms that might otherwise lead people to think I was some sort of foreigner," he added.
"Oh, Bess Pelagic," said Disembowel Myself honourably. "Well, in that case, I expect you know my old friend Five Tongs, who lives in the Street of Heavens, yes?"
Rincewind was ready for this old trick. "No," he said. "Never heard of him, never heard of the street." Disembowel Myself honourably, Dibala grinned happily.
"If I yell foreign devil loud enough, you won't get 3 steps, he said in conversational tones. "The guards will drag you off to the Forbidden City where there's this special thing they do with..."
"I've heard about it," said Rincewind.
"Five Tongs has been the district commissioner for 3 years and the Street of Heavens is the main street," said Disembowel Myself honourably. "I've always wanted to meet a blood-sucking foreign ghost. Have a rice cake."
Rincewind's gaze darted this way and that, but strangely enough the situation didn't seem dangerous, or at least inevitably dangerous. It seemed that danger was negotiable. "Supposing I was to admit I was from behind the wall," he said, keeping his voice as low as possible. Dibala nodded. One hand reached into his robe and in a quick movement revealed and then concealed the corner of something which Rincewind was not entirely surprised to see was entitled What I Did.
"Some people say that beyond the wall there's nothing but deserts and burning wastes and evil ghosts and terrible monsters," said Dibala. "But I say, what about the merchandising opportunities? A man with the right contacts, know what I mean, Shogun? He could go a long way in the land of blood-sucking ghosts."
Rincewind nodded. He didn't like to point out that if you turned up in Ankh-Morpork with a handful of gold, then about 300 people would turn up with a handful of steel.
"The way I see it, what with all this uncertainty about the Emperor, and talk of rebels and that, long live His Excellency the Son of Heaven, of course, there might just be a niche for the open-minded trader. Am I right?"
"Niche?"
"Niche. Like, we've got this staff."
He leaned closer.
"Comes out of a caterpillar's
unidentified pictogram.
It's called silk. It's..."
"Yes, I know. We get it from Clatch," said Rincewind.
"Oh, well, there's this bush, you see. You dry the leaves, but then you put it in hot water and you drink..."
"Yes, tea," said Rincewind. "That comes from Hawanderland." D.M.H. Dibala looked taken aback.
"Well, we've got this powder. You put it in tubes."
"Fireworks. Got fireworks."
"How about this really fine china? It's..."
"In Ankh-Morpork we've got dwarfs that can make china you can read a book through," said Rincewind, "even if it's got tiny footnotes in it." Dibala frowned.
"Sounds like you are very clever blood-sucking ghosts," he said, backing away. "Maybe it's true that you are dangerous."
"Us? Don't worry about us," said Rincewind. "We hardly ever kill foreigners in Ankh-Morpork. It makes it so hard to sell them things afterwards."
"What have we got you want, though? Go on, have a rice cake. On the pagoda. Want to try some pork balls? On a chopstick?"
Rincewind selected a cake. He didn't like to ask about the other stuff. "You've got gold," he said.
"Oh, gold. It's too soft to do much with," said Dibala. "It's all right for pipes and putting on roofs, though."
"Oh, I dare say people in Ankh-Morpork could find a use for some," said Rincewind. His gaze returned to the coins in Dibala's tray. A land where gold was as cheap as lead. "What's that?" he said, pointing to a crumpled rectangle half covered with coins. D.M.H. Dibala looked down.
"It's this thing we have here," he said, speaking slowly. "Of course, it's probably all new to you. It's called money. It's a way of carrying around your..."
"I meant the bit of paper," said Rincewind.
"So did I," said Dibala. "That's a 10 rhino note."
"What does that mean?" said Rincewind.
"Means what it says," said Dibala. "Means it's worth 10 of these."
He held up a gold coin about the size of a rice cake. "Why do you want to buy a piece of paper?" said Rincewind.
"You don't buy it. It's for buying things with," said Dibala.
Rincewind looked blank.
"You go to a market stall,"
said Dybala, getting back into the slow voice for the hard of thinking.
"And you say, 'Good morning, butcher. How much for those dog noses?" And he says, 3 rhino, Shogun.' And you say, 'I've only got a pony, okay?'
"'Look, there's an etching of a pony on it, see? That's what you get on a 10 rhino note.
And he gives you the dog noses and 7 coins in what we call change. Now, if you had a monkey, that's 50 rhino. He'd say, "Got anything smaller?" And,
"But it's only a bit of paper," Rincewind wailed.
"It may be a bit of paper to you, but it's 10 rice cakes to me," said Dybala. "What do you foreign bloodsuckers use? Big stones with holes in them?"
Rincewind stared at the paper money. There were dozens of paper mills in Ankh-Morpork, and some of the craftsmen in the Engravers' Guild could engrave their names and addresses on a pinhead. He suddenly felt immensely proud of his countrymen. They might be venal and greedy, but by heaven they were good at it, and they never assumed that there wasn't any more to learn. "I think you'll find," he said, "that there's a lot of buildings in Ankh-Morpork that need new roofs."
"Really?" said Dybala.
"Oh, yes, the rain's just pouring in."
"And people can pay? Only I heard..."
The Rincewind looked at the paper money again. He shook his head. "Worth more than gold." "They'll pay with notes at least as good as that," he said. "Probably even better. I'll put in a good word for you. And now," he added hurriedly, "which way is out?"
Dybala scratched his head. "Could be a bit tricky," he said. "There's armies outside. You look a bit foreign with that hat. Could be tricky."
There was a commotion further along the alley, or rather a general increase in the commotion. The crowd parted in that hurried way common to unarmed crowds in the presence of weaponry, and a group of guards hurried towards disembowel myself honourably. He stepped back and gave them the friendly grin of one happy to sell at a discount to anyone with a knife. A limp figure was being dragged between two of the guards. As it went past, it raised a slightly blood-stained head and said,
"Extended duration to the..."
before a gloved fist smacked across its mouth. And then the guards were heading down the street. The crowd flowed back. Said DMH.
"Seems to be... Hello, where'd you go to?"
Rincewind reappeared from around a corner. DMH looked impressed. There had actually been a small thunderclap when Rincewind moved.
"See, they got another of them," he said. "Putting up wall posters again, I expect."
"Another one of who?" said Rincewind.
"Red Army."
"Oh."
"I don't pay much attention," said DMH. "They say some old legend's going to come true about emperors and stuff. Can't see it myself."
"He didn't look very legendary," said Rincewind.
"Ah, some people will believe anything."
"What'll happen to him?"
"Difficult to say, with the emperor about to die. Hands and feet cut off, probably."
"What? Why?"
"'Cause he's young. That's leniency. A bit older and it's his head on a spike over one of the gates."
"That's punishment for putting up a poster."
"Stops him doing it again, see?" said DMH.
Rincewind backed away. "Thank you," he said, and hurried off. "Oh, no," he said, pushing his way through the crowds. "I'm not getting mixed up in people's heads being chopped off." And then someone hit him again, but politely. As he sank to his knees and then to his chin, he wondered what had happened to the good old-fashioned, "Hey, you,"